Morning, everybody. My name is Joel Crowther, and I'm a master's student at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Before I begin, I'd like to thank the co-authors for their assistance on this project. They're a diverse group of faculty and extension educators and students at the University of Nebraska. And I'm also grateful to the USDA National Institute of Food and Agriculture for funding this research. The inefficient use of nitrogen fertilizer in crop production over time has led to some serious environmental challenges in the United States. For example, in Nebraska and other U.S. Corn Belt states, we're dealing with groundwater quality issues related to nitrates. In other parts of the U.S., such as in the Chesapeake Bay and the Gulf of Mexico, there are hypoxic zones caused by this inefficient use of nitrogen fertilizer. And the strategies that we use as we recommend nitrogen fertilizer will be most efficient when we can account for the inherent spatial variability present within many of the fields and also be reactive to growing conditions that have occurred during the beginning of the season. One tool for this is the use of active crop canopy sensors for nitrogen management. And these have been shown in previous research to increase nitrogen use efficiency. They basically use the crop as a bioindicator of nitrogen status, and they evaluate nitrogen deficiency or sufficiency by comparison to a well-fertilized reference. The sensing and fertilizing are accomplished simultaneously, and one of the advantages of this in-season form of application is that the sensors can react to and manage the stress that has already occurred in the growing season, and also mitigate end losses that would be present if most of the fertilizer were applied before or around planting. Now, these systems have been studied now for over 20 years, and there are several commercially available systems, and each has its own proprietary algorithm. Even though these systems have shown great success over the years, several researchers have pointed out that these algorithms have been inaccurate in certain subfield regions due to some local extreme spatial variability in soils and in topography. And these researchers have suggested that perhaps integrating soil-based management zones into a sensor-based algorithm approach might make it more efficient. These sensors are measuring a growing crop, and so they can't directly account for underlying soil conditions, which may or may not be present at the time of sensing. And so if we can integrate soil and crop-based information into an algorithm, we propose that it might make for a more successful approach at deriving the optimal nitrogen rate in every area of the field. And so our objective was to test this hypothesis that incorporating soil-based management zones may improve the accuracy of sensor-based algorithms. We conducted 8 experiments on farmers' fields in Nebraska, all center pivot irrigated. Here I'm showing the 4 sites from 2016, which I'll be discussing today. Now, we tried to target a wide range of soils and topography when choosing these sites. We used a Veris MSP3 soil sensing platform to collect soil apparent electroconductivity and soil optical reflectance data before planting. We also retrieved LIDAR 2-meter elevation data from a state database. After looking at this Veris and elevation data, we located field-length treatment strips in regions of greatest spatial variability within each of our fields. And in these treatment strips, we located 10 to 16 nitrogen ramp blocks that were placed end-to-end in the field-length strip. Each of these blocks had 6 randomized nitrogen rates ranging from 0 to 280 kilograms per hectare in 56 kilogram per hectare increments. And the result of this was the ability to derive an economically optimum nitrogen rate, or EONR, for every 45 meters throughout the field and see how it varied according to our delineated management zones. We collected canopy reflectance data between the V9 and VT growth stages, and we used an AgLeader Optrix crop sensor for this, using the near-infrared and red edge wavelengths to calculate normalized difference red edge vegetation index. And then these plots were harvested at maturity. The entirety of the center 2 rows of each plot was harvested with a plot combine. Our first step after harvest was to generate yield response to nitrogen models for every block within the field using a quadratic plateau function. Here's an example of one of these models. On the x-axis, we have applied nitrogen, and on the y-axis, we have our grain yield. Yield is increasing with applied nitrogen up to a point or a plateau, where further increases in applied nitrogen do not increase yield. And the point at which this plateau is reached is often referred to as the agronomic optimum nitrogen rate. And by incorporating the prices of corn and of nitrogen fertilizer, we're able to calculate an economically optimum nitrogen rate. Now, 30 of our 54 nitrogen response blocks in 2016 successfully fit a quadratic plateau function, and they're what I used in the future analysis with management zones. In order to delineate management zones, we first conducted a Pearson correlation analysis between our soil and topographic variables and mid-season NDRE and check plot yield. And those that came back as most significant were used in our management zone delineation. And we made use of management zone analysts to perform the delineation. Now, for sake of time, I'll just show one of the correlation tables. This one is showing the correlation between our variables and mid-season NDRE. The soil variables used were all from the data generated using the Veris. We looked at shallow and deep electrical conductivity, the simple ratio, which is near infrared over red soil reflectance, and then calculated organic matter. And then our topographic variables were relative elevation and slope. Looking at the left, at our shallow EC, this was the variable that came back as statistically significant for all four of the sites. However, if we look a little closer, the correlation was positive for two of our sites, and then it was negative for the other two sites. And this is showing that likely any approach to management zone delineation might require field specificity. There's probably not going to be one silver bullet to incorporate an algorithm, one variable that will always work in our integrated approach. As you look at the other table, those listed in cells in green came back were statistically significant correlations. We can see that all the other variables had significant correlations for at least one site, but there was shallow EC was the only one returning significant correlations for all sites. The next step was to delineate management zones and then see how EONR and a few other variables compared between the zones. And I'll be showing you that just for two of the four sites in 2016. So for this first site, we used shallow and deep electroconductivity to delineate two management zones. This field is classified as a sandy loam across the field. However, zone one, shown in the light blue, more towards the right, tends to be more sandy, and it also has lower native soil fertility. There's lower organic matter, lower cation exchange capacity in this field, and so we would expect a lower yield potential for this field. I'll also point out on each of these maps, I've plotted mid-season NDRE, and we can see in zone one, towards the right, that they did indeed have lower mid-season NDRE values on average than zone two, kind of confirming what we just showed in the correlation analysis. The next step was to plot yield response to nitrogen between zones and to see if the EONR generated was statistically significant. By looking at this graph, I'll mention this is the same axes, applied N on the x-axis, grain yield on the y-axis. We can see the response curves generated are quite similar, but the plateaus are quite different. EONR is shown on the x-axis and also in the table. There was a difference of 31 kilograms per hectare in our EONR. However, this was not a statistically significant difference. Now, one of the reasons for that may be the high variability that was experienced in the field. The EONR actually ranged 123 kilograms per hectare in the field. And within zone differences, were also around 80 kilograms per hectare. So very high variability in the field. Maybe the spatial variability is a little too fine for just two management zones, so that's something we're continuing to look at. The yield at UNR was a statistically significant difference of 4.1 megagrams per hectare between zones. We can kind of see on the graph, if we look at the y-axis, there was a statistical difference between our check plot yields and also our yield plateaus, again, had that statistically significant difference. So kind of confirming what we saw with, more higher sand content, lower native soil fertility for zone two resulted in that very decreased yield potential. So even though we didn't have a statistically significant difference in EONR, we can see that there may be potential for integrating this approach as we kind of hash out some of the error that we're seeing here. I'll now show one more site. This one we used shallow electroconductivity, percent organic matter, and relative elevation to delineate two management zones once again. In this case, the light blue zone has very severely eroded slopes and also tends to have lower native soil fertility, lower organic matter and CEC than the zone in dark blue. And then I guess I could show again our mid-season NDRE. It's not quite as stark of a difference between zones, but there is tending toward lower mid-season NDRE in the lower productivity zone. So now we get into harvest. The first thing we can kind of notice on this graph is that the yield plateaus are relatively the same. There's no statistical difference between the yield plateaus. However, the response curves are shaped differently than the last site I showed you. The difference in EONR between zones for this site was only 15 kilograms per hectare, which was not statistically different. Another thing I might mention on this site is that there were fewer number of replications that could be used for the model fitting, which may have contributed to our lack of a statistical difference. But in general, looking at our yield plateaus, there wasn't much difference in the yield potential, unless we look at our y-axis, where the check plot yields did tend to be different, pointing to lower native soil fertility. I think what we can gain from this site is that an integrated approach incorporating management zones and a sensor-based algorithm may not be the answer for all fields. There may be cases where a sensor-based approach might not result in greater productivity for all of our fields. So we're kind of looking at field-specific scenarios as being the most likely answer to be more efficient. So to summarize a little bit, the preliminary results we have that I've showed you today are mixed. The managed zones might improve nitrogen recommendation accuracy, but the criteria for delineating those zones may be field-specific. And as I mentioned, some fields may not benefit from this integrated approach or even from variable rate application in general. As far as future plans, I have 8 site years of data to further analyze, and I plan on comparing an integrated approach with sensor-based application alone and to uniform management, for which we have data collected around each of our NRAMP blocks. So with that, I thank you for your time, and I'll entertain any questions.
All right, any questions?
Yes.
Did you look at the Optrix rate that was prescribed through the Optrix system and compare that to the results?
The question was if we looked at the Optrix rate and how it compared to our results. We do plan on doing that, and actually we had a study comparing grower management to an Optrix-based algorithm, basically in every field that I studied, as well as an additional 14 others in each year. Yes?
I wanted to say this is really nice, but I also, and I apologize for this question, but I didn't quite get how you derive NDRE.
Oh, good question. So we used the Optrix crop sensor, which has red edge and near-infrared wavelengths. And so the calculation for that is near infrared minus red edge over the sum of the two wavelengths. So that's our NDRE index. Yes?
What were the characteristics of the fields that didn't respond to your...
So I showed 2 today out of the 4 from last year. The other 2 I've not finished analyzing, but one of those in general was very level and pretty much the same soil type as silt loam throughout. Also heavier in organic matter. And so really the highest variability sites are where we think we'll have more potential. So topography seems to be playing a role. And in the sites this year, there's several with a lot more rolling hills that we're excited to analyze. But that's where we're looking for the highest potential. Yes?
Any thoughts for more spectral regions that can be hyperspectral or
That's a good question. The question was if there are any thoughts of looking at different regions of the electromagnetic spectrum. Through our research, we've found that NDRE does a pretty good job with the growth stage of corn that we're looking at. So we're not currently thinking to do that, but I hope other researchers plan to. I think there's good potential there. Yes?
Shallow and deep EC, what would be the difference in depth?
I believe shallow EC goes to... I might be wrong on this, but I think shallow EC goes to around, about a foot, so maybe a third of a meter, down to, I think, around 2 meters for the deep EC. Yes?
On the field that you got the most variability, the sandy versus the lighter, how sandy is that, like in terms of CEC or organic matter?
Good question. So the highest organic matter in that field is around 1.7%. That zone 2 with the lighter organic matter was all less than 1%. So, CEC was less than 10 for the entire site. Very sandy, a lot of leaching potential there.
All right. Any other questions? No? All right. Thank you, Joel.